I thought I was gonna eat for free this week. And then Katie told me that there was an opening in the schedule and I would have to sing for my supper or at least lecture for my lunch, which I guarantee will be more pleasant. Fortunately, she also suggested what I should talk about. There is gonna be an ITP Pro program, KITP program, on this subject without the question mark a year from now with this motley cast of organizers. And so what I'll try to talk about for 20 minutes is what we hope to do. I guess the bottom's in focus and the top is not. Oh well, is that okay? So, you know, one of the things we do here at the KITP is to bring together different fields where there's some timely opportunity for interaction. And you would certainly think that superstring theory and cosmology would have always been a natural pair of such fields, but until today, there has never been a program on this specific subject. And yet this past year, there were in fact at least five independent proposals for such a program, and it was obviously the right thing to do. So what has changed? Well, until very recently, I think you would have to say that the understanding of the possible impact on cosmology was almost nil. There was a very small number of very speculative ideas. And now, over the past few years, a number of different directions have all converged on this subject. Some of these directions actually do start from the cosmological side with observation, but really this more comes from the internal dynamics of string theory. Our understanding of the theory has become much more sophisticated in the past few years, and to the point where we can and probably must think about some cosmological questions. So I'm going to basically run down this list. Now, first, brain worlds you've all already heard a bit about, and so I'll be very brief. Just a few brief comments. One of the new developments of the last few years in string theory is the understanding that the extra dimensions need not be smooth. They can have these localized disturbances, brains. This changes the dimensional analysis so that the dimensions might be larger and therefore would be relevant to cosmology more recently. One of the things one would do at a program like this, you know, a lot of the model building has been rather phenomenological. One of the things one needs to do is to make contact between the more phenomenological models and what string theory can really produce. A couple more specific comments. It's been said many times, and I don't know how true it is, that string theory doesn't naturally give rise to inflationary potentials. Now that we understand that there are many more dynamical possibilities within string theory, there are many more possibilities for getting inflation. Here's one which is rather trivial, which is that if you have a brain and an anti-brain separated in the fifth dimension, the potential between them is exactly a cartoon of an inflationary potential, because when they're far apart, they attract weakly, and then when they get very close, they rather suddenly annihilate. Boom. I don't know, by the way, who first made this observation. There'll be very few references in my talk because I'm rather new to the subject, and if I try to put them in, I will surely get them wrong. There's also the ekparotic idea, which is the same picture with different labels and different words, and I will say nothing. You've already heard about that. Now, topic two is space-time singularities. String theory as a complete theory of quantum gravity is supposed to tell us what happens when space-time has a singularity where the low-energy field equations break down. And in many, many examples, it does. There's a large number now of different kinds of singularity. I've named a few of them, which string theory resolves. That is, the field equations break down at a point or in some region, and string theory says what happens there. String theory says, A, under what conditions this is an acceptable solution, and B, what happens at the would-be singular point. But all of these examples, there's actually a large number of different techniques we have for understanding these things, and a large number of different ways that this resolution can work out in detail. But all of these are static singularities, static geometries. The really interesting singularities, the Big Bang, the Big Crunch, are much, much harder to think about. And people have tried for some time without any real progress. It's interesting that a number of ideas for string cosmology really seem to require a big bounce, that a contracting universe bounce and re-expand. And that moment of singularity and bounce is the property of string theory. By the way, I should say that I make no distinction between the term string theory and M theory. It's just the theory. Anyway, a recent observation growing out of the ekpyrotic idea is that the particular bounce that's required in the ekpyrotic picture is, from some points of view, rather gentle looking. It's not so different from those static singularities that are already understood. It's sort of an analytic continuation of those static singularities, and therefore it really might happen. So this is now a rather precise and sharp question that string theorists can jump on, and we have. And I think so far you'd have to say that the initial idea was rather optimistic. Namely, the bounce, if it occurs, is much more complicated and nowhere near as gentle as the singularities we understand. In fact, we have to take it's unstable, and one has to take seriously the possibility that a bounce does not occur, and that perhaps a big crunch is really an end of time. But again, this is an open and fairly well-defined question that we can hope to bang on for a while. CMB, I'll say only a few and somewhat discouraging words. First, as you've heard in earlier talks, these various bouncing ideas make very definite, although still controversial, predictions for the actual parameters that you see. Again, if string theory could tell us what happens at the bounce, then string theory would be directly relevant to things that you see. But again, so far, one reading of string theory is that it doesn't produce a bounce at all. Another direction is that given the increasing precision of the measurements of the CMB, one can start to think about small stringy corrections to the fluctuations. And as you might expect, in sort of normal models, these are very small. This parameter, which comes in squared, is too small. There are some exotic or special models in which there might be some amplification, and maybe we'll be lucky. Okay, lambda greater than zero or something like it. This is actually two problems for string theory. One of them is practical and one of them is conceptual, and I'll talk about the practical one first and the conceptual one later. There's an old question in string theory, which is, does string theory have any vacua which look like ours? Four-dimensional, no supersymmetry, stable, and zero cosmological constant. Now, obviously, we believe that the answer is yes, or we wouldn't be doing this. But until recently, we've had no real tools to try to construct these. And in fact, before we ever got around to doing it, you folks changed the question on us. A little PowerPoint here. Okay. Namely, instead of a zero cosmological constant, maybe we should be shooting for a small positive cosmological constant or some form of dark energy. Now, it's interesting that, in fact, our understanding of the string dynamics has reached the point where we can say maybe yes to actually to the modified question. Namely, maybe we have real string constructions of vacua which are stable, a non-supersymmetric, small positive cosmological constant. One discouraging point is if there's one of these, there's probably an enormous number. Which is a breeding ground for the anthropic principle and other bad things. But this is the way things might be. Anyway, one might hope to ask at some point, from the point of view of string theory as we now understand it today, which of these is most likely, lambda equals zero, lambda positive, or quintessence? And my reading of what we understand today is, in fact, that of these, a fixed positive cosmological constant is the one we understand best how to get in a non-supersymmetric theory. But if you ask a different person, or you ask me tomorrow, you might get a different answer. This is, again, an interesting and lively open question. Coming to sort of more fundamental questions, what is the central defining principle of string theory, analogous to the equivalence principle in general relativity and the uncertainty principle in quantum mechanics? We don't know. Well, we know what the name of it is. We just don't know what it is. The holographic principle seems like what it must be. And in rough terms, the holographic principle states that the fundamental degrees of freedom are very much less local than what we're used to in physics. Rather than being associated with space-time points as in normal quantum field theory and so on, they live on the boundary of any given region in some sense. And this idea, which grows out of black hole quantum mechanics, has a precise realization in at least one context, which is anti-de Sitter space. Anti-de Sitter space has a well-defined boundary. And in anti-de Sitter space, we know precisely what the holographic principle means. And in fact, this is the one case, this space-time and similar space-times, where we really know precisely and non-perturbatively what string theory is. And but for zero or positive cosmological constant, we are completely confused. You know, it's really interesting. If you supernova guys had gotten the curve going the other way, we string theorists would be going, wow, we know everything. We've got it all figured out. You know, we're on the edge of being done. And instead, we're completely confused. Is it possible that you had a magnet upside down or something? finally, and again, this is sort of far, well, I don't want to say far out. You know, the initial condition. There should be a precise theory of the initial condition, something akin to the Hartle-Hawking wave function or one of its various competitors. String theory should ultimately tell us which of these is right and what it really means, or maybe that the language is wrong and what the right language is. I have to say that to date, string theory as yet casts, I think it's safe to say, no light on these old debates. But someday it should. So I guess I'm actually done. And so just to summarize, I think there are really many interesting and timely questions in this subject, and they really do interpolate between, you know, things that you can observe and what are really the most fundamental questions in string theory. Thank you. When I listed the question, the old question of vacua like ours, it included no moduli as one of the conditions. And in fact, the one construction I know of, which is due to Silverstein, has examples with no moduli. And I think there's very, very good reason to believe that there are lots of string vacua which have no moduli. The problem is they're kind of, by their nature, since they have no moduli, they're in the middle of parameter space, and they have no small parameters. So they are, by their nature, the hardest ones to understand and the last ones you'll find. Not that they're not there, they're just hard to understand.
Do you think humans are intelligent enough to complete string theory, or do we need to, like, genetically engineer ourselves?
Well, you should have asked Andre this, but you know, it's really amazing that this is that you know, we're smart enough to figure this out. You know, but if we get stuck, indeed, in a few years, genetic engineer will come along and you know, and then Ed Witten will be a dummy and we'll get right. I don't know. You know, I'm the wrong person to ask. In the broad sense, the thing we've learned in the last few years is that there's a much wider range of possibilities for the fundamental scales than we thought. You should ask some of the more detailed people like Pierre whether, you know, whether in fact these low-scale string models can, you know, can give acceptable inflationary cosmologies. I just don't know. So do you want to?
They could give you
no scale inflation. Okay. So I guess there's enough different inflationary models, the answer must be yes for one of them. Yeah.
So I'm getting the feeling that Lambda is the fall guy, or maybe Buck Hirschman is the fall guy. Left here.
I'm not thinking of Walter anybody.
I'm joking that if Lambda were negative, you do everything. But is it really true that you can do small scale stuff like tell us what's going to happen when the black hole evaporates if Lambda happens to be negative?
Well, you know, I mean, the statement that we do everything, of course, was partly a joke because there's lots of details. But the truth is that the truth is that conceptually there is an enormous difference between positive and negative lambda. But now let me answer your more detailed question, which is: suppose we had a universe with a small negative lambda, so it was almost flat. We built a black hole and it evaporated. Then, in fact, the ADS-CFT duality is supposed to tell us, in principle, exactly what happens. Unfortunately, the rule today is you take your initial state, you translate to the gauge theory, you give it to the lattice gauge theorist to evolve it forward, you translate back. It's, you know, there's a need for a more complete and conceptual understanding, but, you know, I think we believe there's an answer in principle. Yeah?
But is that calculation
ever going to be done until the computer? Right. You know, it won't be done until it's the conceptual understanding is better. You're talking about simulating a four-dimensional supersymmetric theory of very large, and you're talking about something which is sort of well outside current technology. And I really think that the conceptual progress will come before we ever get to that point. But yeah, this question of computability in principle is something that goes back to Wilson and field theory, and I think we're sort of at that point for this question in string theory, but it's still only in principle. Yeah.
One more quick question. There's been some literature on the inconsistency of string theory in cyberspace. How worried should you be about that?
Okay, what I should have said so we don't know what the holographic principle really means in every context, and especially when the space-time is flat or de Sitter. This is connected to the fact that we don't really know what the observables are, and that's what these papers are about. Is that a trivial question or a deep question? It's usually been a deep question. I mean, figuring out what the right observables are was the key both to relativity and to quantum mechanics, and so it's probably a deep question, not a trivial one. But
in particular inflationary cosmology, they, by their construction, anti-holographic. Because the main principle of inflation is that I cannot care less about the boundary conditions and what happens far away from me, so I completely forgetting about this. This was the main essence of inflationary theory. So it is kind of against the idea that everything is playing at the boundary and everything which is inside.
Okay.